All right, guys. Welcome once again to your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I am Brad Howard, and I've got John Barbin on the phone. And today's going to be a really, really important podcast, I think, because we're going to go over some questions that we're getting throughout the transformation contest. Guys are submitted a bunch of questions. And, you know, like I say, if you ever have any questions that you want us to answer on a podcast, just reply to any of the emails we send out, and, you know, we'll definitely get to them. Obviously, we can't answer every single question. You know, kind of back and forth, mainly because, you know, we have, you know, a couple of lovely ladies handling that for us, but this is the best way to do it. So, just realize that all of your emails are seen by human eyes, and, you know, we'll get that taken care of. So as I'm saying that, John, do you have anything really quickly that you kind of wanted to touch on before we jump into these questions?
Well, I've been seeing some conversations in the forum, and, guys are talking about getting the really, really ripped look versus maintaining it long-term. And Jason and a few others who've, you know, won contests and gotten really good shape brought up some good points that the shape you're going to get into at the end of this contest and the idea of kind of dialing it in, we're basically preparing, we're coaching you and preparing you similar to what you do for an actual bodybuilding show. That final look that you have on the final day is probably slightly more extreme than the type of look you'll walk around with after the show, or after the contest is over. So just be aware that there's contest picture ripped, then there's how you maintain it lean after that. And those are two different things. So as it moves along, and when you do see some of those extreme pictures, unless you're a true ectomorph, almost nobody can maintain that really, really deep sort of cut look all the time. That's just a matter of genetics, and it's, you can force it for a few days, but there's going to be what needs to be a look that you have to force, and then another look that's relatively simple to maintain, and that's to do with how you just kind of naturally store water. So you can get like that shredded look. It's just there's a kind of an extra step for the show or for the contest, and then there's what will be very manageable and still look really good for afterwards.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That was kind of one of the concerns I had and voiced kind of in private between both Barbin and Pilon. The fact that, you know, the people are really aiming for the shredded look. I mean, just trying to get shredded and not even specific to the contest. I mean, this whole shredded look thing it's really not sustainable for most people. And for, you remember how we talked about in the past of don't lose sight of the goal. You know, the goal is to get to something that you can pretty easily maintain. You know, trying to maintain a shredded look like that is virtually impossible. I don't know anybody. I mean, I know plenty of guys that compete and stuff like that, and they're on tons of stuff to even get down there. But it's tough. I mean, and then trying to gain muscle with that as well. I mean, it's going to be a struggle. I think it's going to be a lot more work than you really think. So just remember that, you know, there's a difference in contest look versus what you're going to sustain. And so we kind of go back to that, you know, for most guys, you know, hitting that 0.45 of your waist. I mean, that's, I would consider that your sustainable look. And when we talked about, you know, if your waist measurement is above that 0.45 of your height, you know, getting down that 0.45 is your first goal. We've talked about this in the past. And then once you get there, if you're there or below, I wouldn't even worry about any type of, you know, caloric restriction unless you're prepping for contest, unless you're going to enter in the contest and you're trying to get ripped at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you not agree?
Yeah, no, exactly. And then I saw a few other comments about guys that are their waist measurement's actually below what our golden number is for their height. That you got to remember, your waist measurement includes your lower back too, obviously. So that overall measurement can change based on muscle mass from in general. And going, you know, having your waist measurement come up a bit from training isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's kind of like the difference between having the look of a lean boy or a lean man. And so if you have, I guess this gets into some other issues. If you already have, quote, a golden ratio from waist to shoulder, you may have a golden ratio, but not the golden ratio. In other words, the AI ratio is actually having it at full size, not at some undersized degree. So in other words, and this is part of the research that's in the book, that's in the new version of the book. You know, our actual, I don't know if we mentioned this the last time, but our actual skeletal structure and our base muscle mass without training, if we were, you know, had zero fat on us, is likely already in the golden ratio, but like drastically undersized to the one that the research indicates is the one that, you know, stimulates attraction and influence and all those other, is everything that we're kind of after. So we're kind of talking about taking what the base shape of the body is and just expanding it by growing the muscles. We're not talking about just reducing body fat down to a skeletal structure, which is already in the golden ratio. So it's kind of, I think some guys have gotten lost in the idea that, well, I have the ratio, but I'm three inches smaller in the waist and shoulders. Well, yes, yeah. Now you need to build that whole thing up. I mean, the point is at the ideal size, not at whatever some size smaller.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I'll admit it. I mean, my waist is bigger now than it was when I was in high school coming out. I mean, once I started weight training, my waist increased. I mean, there's a difference when you're handling 30 pound dumbbells versus when you're handling 100 pound dumbbells. You know, I mean, your core is going to increase a little bit in size. I mean, it just makes sense.
And putting an inch on your waist doesn't mean it's going straight out to the sides an inch. It's an inch in circumference. So
yeah, and which is really like a sixth of an inch
visually.
Like out, like
right.
If you go out,
which is a bit of mass on the front abs, a bit of mass on the obliques, and some mass on the lower back, and your spinal erectors. So it's, you know what I mean? Like it's on a mass that big, like versus an inch on your forearm or an inch on your arm, that becomes more obvious. So the only way to describe it is the difference between a boy's body and a man's body. And, you know, you can have, just a lean, young 15 or 14 year old guy has probably a 1:1.6 ratio from his waist to his shoulders, but they're all way too small. Like all of it has to come up. So that's kind of what we're talking about. A lot of guys who are still don't have years of training under their belt, they were like, well, I'm already at my golden waist, but you know, and I'm like, well, yeah, no, if you're under it, or if you're, you know, sorry, not that they're at their golden waist, but if they're under their golden waist, all of it still has to come up. Like the shoulders have to, all of it. So it's just an overall addition of muscle mass.
But it's like a lot of people like to talk about Taylor Lautner or whatever. If you look at his before and after pictures, like the one from a year ago versus the one from today when he's in New Moon, and a lot of people put this up, I mean, it's very obvious that his waist size has increased with the amount of muscle he's put on. Now, how he did it, who knows? But, you know, the fact of the matter is that it will come up. So, and we're not talking, like I say, it's not dramatic, and it's not saying it's not fat. But if you added 2 inches to your waist, let's just say two, I mean, that would only be an inch, no, excuse me, about half of an inch, or maybe a little bit more than half of an inch.
Actually,
it wouldn't even be that much. It'd be a third of an inch out, around.
Right, from a visual standpoint, yeah.
Would add 2 inches, right. So, yeah, just stabilizing and things like that, I mean, it's basically your core, just by handling weight and walking around with it and doing all the other stuff, it's going to increase in size.
Yeah.
You know, and bring everything up. And remember, I mean, your shoulders need to increase at 1.6 times that in order to keep up.
Yeah, so it's proportions. I mean, of all things that we're talking about, proportion. It's the proportion of it's the ratio from your waist to your shoulders, but it's also at the size for that's fits on your height.
Yeah.
And the same thing goes for guys that are really, really big, who have really, really big shoulders. They could actually be at a golden shoulder to waist ratio, but all too big. And in those cases, all of it has to come down.
Right. So like mainstream bodybuilders, like chances are those guys probably have
some of them can be above on both. And to the point where it's golden, but to all of it's too big.
Exactly.
And the look, you look at it, and there is a distortion both directions. It's one of those things where you're looking at, you're going, eh, that guy's just, something about him's too bulky. And then on the smaller side, you're like, eh, the guy in general just needs to be bigger. So it's converging to the point regardless, right?
Right. So. And that makes sense. I mean, those guys take steroids, all of their muscles increase, so their shoulders increase as well as their waist, in which you see that. That's pretty obvious across the board for a lot of these guys. So just remember that. I mean, it's a very masculine look. I mean, it's not, I think guys, just because it's named Adonis, people might think it's kind of like a pretty boy look. It's not. It's very shoulder dominant. I've said this time and time again, it's very shoulder dominant. So it's lean and muscular.
Yeah, it's not just lean, all the way lean and then you're there.
Right. I mean, if you look in the mirror, I mean, you need to be able to look in the mirror and go, is this a masculine look? You know, I mean, it's like a warrior look. I mean, you know, the kind of the Greek god type of a thing. I mean, you have to look at it and go, am I there? I mean, and it's for most guys, it's pretty obvious. I mean, you look at it and you're like, I look at myself and I'm like, all right, I got a little bit. So it's definitely different. So, which leads into, okay, so we kind of got talking about that. Let's lead into the first question on this. Let's go back to, okay. So let's talk about measuring shoulders. And one of the things that we're going to be covering in 3.0 as well is exactly how to measure, because we think a lot of people are just kind of winging it and just kind of running around. So this will kind of get into that. It says, Dan writes in, when I measure my shoulders, is it always the widest part? So if one part is wider than the other, I pick the widest part, or is it right between your nipples and collarbone?
It's technically the widest part. I realize everyone, and I was reading this in the forums, I realize everyone has slightly different shoulder, I guess, structure. But in general, we should all basically be lining up at the same spot. So it widest part as visually from, you know, right in front. So if you're looking at yourself in the mirror with your arms down, there's the widest part of your shoulders, basically where the tape measure should line up across and around. And you're also standing in good posture, right? Like standing sort of like at, I always say this, like at military attention. So like chest out, shoulders back, head up. And that's because that's the only way to get a consistent measurement. Like if you shift, slouch, you know, move around, like you're going to get a different measurement just by moving around. So you do have to take your posture into consideration. So that's why I say standing at attention, standing up in good posture. And then that is kind of because that's also how you should be presenting yourself anyways. Like you want to learn to walk and just kind of function in good posture too. So that's the way you should be measuring it. And that, so at the widest point of your shoulder almost always measures up with the very top of like where your armpit is, like as viewed just from in front with your arms down. And then that's basically, because that should also capture the thickest, widest part of your back.
Right.
And yep. I mean, find that, you've got to find basically that spot on you, but it should always be the widest part of your shoulder. And the easiest way to do it is with a myotape, one of those like tape measures that are designed for measuring your body, and they kind of lock into place. They're cheap. They're like $6. You can get them at GNC, or you can just go online and just Google search myotape, myotape, and the brand that like sort of everyone uses, is it'll pop up and you can buy it. It's just really cheap.
Yeah.
That's what we use. It's the easiest thing to use. And that one, you don't even need someone to help you, because the tape locks into place and then you just take, you don't have to touch it, and it just holds onto you. Right. So.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and transition into waist as well, because I think this one is the one that's really, I mean, shoulders is giving some people confusion, but I think waist is giving some people confusion as well. And Pelon actually did some little experiments really quickly, 2 weeks ago to kind of lock this down for us. So let's talk about that one too.
Well, the waist measurement's at, I don't know why this one's so hard. It's right at your belly button, your navel, and around. So I have no idea why that one's hard, because it's not like sucked in, and it's just in a, again, good posture, but good posture doesn't mean sucked in. Good posture just means normal. So you're just standing and then just lock the tape around your waist and see where it's at. And that's it. I mean, obviously, you can force your gut out. You can also suck that area in. So not in either of those states. So don't forcefully push it out, but also don't forcefully draw it in, just as you would be standing.
Right.
So, I mean, because waist is that's easy for your waist to expand and contract just with a deep breath. So, that one's a bit of a trick. And I would also say not in a extended fasted state, but like you could consider your waist as a range between overnight fasted, so in the morning before you've eaten, and then at the end of the day after just regular eating. Even if you're eating in a deficit, still at the end of a day, it'll be different. And so probably the average of those two numbers is what your waste actually, you could more or less consider what your waste is. So if I did a measurement this morning without eating, and then I did another one this evening, you know, say, you know, at 9 or 10 tonight, those would likely be two different numbers. And the average of those two, or like right the split between the two, is really what, you know, what the number is, because that's what you look like more or less throughout the day.
Right. Yeah, the other thing too that I think a lot of guys are really getting confused about, especially with waist, like for me, if I measure my belly button, edit my belly button, I'm probably at a 32 and a half right now. But if I measure a little bit down, I'm about a 33 and some change.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing just kind of freaking people out, because they're like, oh, well, you know, I'm at a 32 and a half. My golden waist is like a 32, but I don't have a six pack yet. Now, here's one thing you got to consider is that obviously you've got a little bit more fat down below. If that waist goes down by where you're measuring by a fifth of an inch, the rest of that is going to go down probably significantly more, because that's where all the fat's being stored. Am I wrong with that?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, well, I mean, also, yeah, it kind of, the fat in that area sort of falls to that spot, so to speak. So,
right.
So it does sort of, for lack of a better word, collect in that area. Because if you were hanging upside down, it wouldn't look like that. It would kind of be up more towards your rib cage.
Right.
To some degree. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't worry about being at your ideal golden waist and not having a six pack yet. That's more to do with not having enough muscle mass than it's to do with anything else. So that might just be an indication that, yeah, you just got a lot more training to do. It doesn't mean you look bad. It just means there's more muscle mass to build.
Yeah. I mean, the way I'm looking at it and what I'm seeing on my body right now is that if, like, even though, you know, you're measuring at your belly button for your technical, you know, your technical waist measurement, if you were, like for me, if I go down and measure that one thing, that's how I keep track of where I'm really at, because that's the biggest part on me. So I want to see that number go down. And
right.
When that number gets down to my golden waist, which is about, I think, 31 and maybe 31.5, something like that. When that number gets down, well, it's going to be the same size as my belly button measurement. They're going to be the same. So that, for me, that's a good way to look at how much more I have to go. But if you can see what I'm saying, that fat's going to vanish out, because that's where it's at. And so even though your technical belly button measurement doesn't decrease that much, like I say, don't freak yourself out thinking that you're going to have to go dramatically below your golden waist to get the six pack, because you're probably not going to.
Remember what Ron said the first time. He said it all happens right at the end.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, once that little pooch thing disappears,
you're basically there. But a lot of guys I know who trained for shows, it all starts showing up in the last couple of weeks. That's a pretty common phenomenon.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So remember, kind of your whole goal in this thing is to get to a look that you can maintain, and, you know, get within, you know, kind of striking distance, where if you really wanted to get lean, like lean, rip lean, you could do it in about a month.
Yeah.
That's what I consider my personal goal. I think that probably should be everybody else's personal goal. It's really easy to maintain. You're not really having to watch your calories too crazy. It gives you some freedom, and you're not freaking yourself out as well. So, all right, so we got that one handled. Let me pull the next one up. Sorry, it just kind of takes a little bit of time. All right, okay. Let's go with this. All right, there's two questions. Would it be a realistic goal to aim for a 2-inch increase in your shoulder measurement in the first 3 weeks and subsequently taper off the increase to 1 inch per 3 weeks? I know it's really dependent on how long you've been training and your starting measurement, so here goes. I've been lifting sporadically for the past 2 years on a 5x5 program, 131.56, and have a starting shoulder measurement of 43.5 and a waist of 30. So I'm guessing he's trying to get an idea of how fast his shoulder's going to grow.
Yeah, there's way too many factors to consider there. I mean, training history is one. Somatotype is two. I mean... That's just I mean, eat fat levels 3. Like, it's going to come up if you train them. And if you train on our system, it should come up faster than most other systems because ours is designed to bring that up as much as possible. So, but the speed that it comes up is person to person. The anabolic continuum suggests that people have different responsiveness rates. Now, part of that is due to actual training fact, like how long you've been training and all those things. But part of that's also genetic. So it's almost impossible to predict. The point is, it will come up if you do something about it, if you're training. So also intensity. Like I mean, we can only guess at how intense you're actually pushing through your workouts. It doesn't just because you say you're on a, you know, 5x whatever workout doesn't mean, like, just saying it doesn't mean to me that you're doing it at the intensity that's required. So I can't at all really give you any kind of indication. Okay, they will come up. I just don't know what rate. And the best thing you can do is go back and look at some of our other contestants from the other contests and ask them how they did and see what their numbers were and what changed on them, and you'll get a better idea that way. But I suppose you could, if you can model yourself after somebody who's similar to you, that's about as best you can get. So if you don't have the kind of the base look that I do, then I'm not a good model. But if you have more of a base look of like Pierre or somebody else, then that's somebody to look to for what to expect. And that's just because they're more similar in genetic makeup and training history. It's kind of hard to find someone who's very similar to you, because even if you find someone who's genetically similar to you, they may not have the same training history. So you see how it gets pretty hard. It gets tricky really quick. It's just not that hard. It's difficult to find somebody who really matches you exactly to model yourself after.
Right.
As far as expectations, and especially as such a specific expectation of a speed of change.
So, yeah, I mean, you've got to remember, I mean, even though all of this stuff, and we kind of touched on this in the past about converging and diverging solutions to stuff. I mean, even though, I mean, like I say, our programs will have you converging to, you know, a perfect AI. When we say perfect, I mean, we're talking about, you know, having, you know, good shoulders and the waist is where it's supposed to be. You know, initial conditions matter, man. I mean, I don't think people understand that. I mean, where you start matters. The conditions of your life right now matter. I mean, what you're eating, I mean, you know, where you're at, you know, how much time you have to train, how much time you can create to train. And there's just a lot of things that matter that, you know, and that's okay. It doesn't mean that it's going to hurt you. It just means that your life, you know, there are going to be some constraints based on how you're living right now, and that's going to determine the speed at which you can get things. I mean, that happens in genetics and other stuff as well. So, but I think Pierre in 12 or in the 10-week program that he did, and he actually, you know, maybe got a little bit leaner, but I think he did. Was it an inch and a half on his waist?
On his
shoulders?
Yeah, I think something like that. So, and he's a true ectomorph. So, I mean, that's relatively significant, especially for someone. He had quite a bit of training history. He'd been training quite a bit. So,
and was over and was stacking everything he could.
And he kind of overtrained there too. So, I mean, but that was just him. That doesn't mean that'll exactly happen to the next guy over. So. You gotta test it and see. I mean, getting caught up in like predicting things could just leave you stuck in place.
Yeah, I think we probably need to revisit muscle index sometime in the future.
We will do that for sure.
Yeah, maybe we do that next week. Just really revisit muscle index, because I think one of the things people are kind of missing the boat on is they're not progressing in the weight that they're pushing around, and. You know, from my perspective, just kind of what I've seen and just kind of talking to everyone who's kind of even getting into the mold that we're talking about, I mean, you're moving 100-pound dumbbells in a couple of lifts. You know, we're talking like incline chest presses. You're probably up to pushing 100-pound dumbbells, you know, rows, like the one-arm rows. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're in that range of 100-pound dumbbells. I mean, pretty much everybody – is around there. I mean, give or take 10 pounds. So, I mean, we're not talking about you know, inclining, you know, 50-pound dumbbells and you're there.
Oh, you mean people who are, when they're approaching their actual true golden measurements.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's another thing. It doesn't even matter. If you have a 1 to 1.6 waist-to-shoulder ratio, but your weights aren't approaching that, then you just know you got a long way to go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's hard to quantify, obviously, because some people can lift. I mean, we've talked about this in the past. I mean, some people have genetic predispositions and the way their muscles insert and all that type of stuff, like John talked about, that there are certain lifts that they can lift more and you can train better. And
based on muscle insertion levers, like how tall you are. But in general, like, guys have always asked us that. So that's where the muscle index comes from. Yeah, we'll cover that next week.
Yeah, we'll have to, because I think we really just basically touched on it. We didn't really go into it. So we need to go into that a little bit more and really nail that down, because I think that's important. I mean, strength levels are important to this look. I mean, like I say, it's a masculine look. I mean, you can't be a puss, for lack of a better term. So,
hey, what's next?
All right. Okay. Number two is, I hear a lot of talk about omega-3s and saturated fat having favorable effects on your body. Would you recommend me supplementing with fish oil capsules? I know you do, and I do from time to time. Just, I don't know.
I take fish oils because my HDL level was slightly low, and fish oils is one of the only ways to get to affect your HDL. And if I review everything I eat, I just don't eat enough fish or any source of omega-3s. The North American diet, dude, you're totally breathing into the microphone there. Don't do that.
Oh. Yeah.
If you look at a standard North American diet, if you don't really go out of your way to get omega-3s into your diet, it's pretty easy to end up without too much of them. Like grass-fed meats are one way to get them in, but it's almost impossible to find grass-fed meat. You need to really eat a lot of leafy greens to try to get them through that source. Fish oil capsules are the simplest way. Eating fish is another way, but if you're not a fish eater, or you just sort of don't think about it, or if mercury is an issue, you know, you think you don't want to eat fish because of mercury, you're kind of caught. You're sitting here going, well, how do I actually get omega-3s into my diet? And it's partly to do with the way the food supply is designed. We just, it's not in a lot of the items you'd commonly think to go eat. Even like the quote healthy stuff, a lot of them just don't have it in there either. So it's one of the few supplements that, for at least a North American or westernized North American style of diet, it seems to make sense to put them back in. So you can have fish oils. There's nothing wrong with them. Just try to find a good brand. I take them, so I wouldn't discourage anyone from experimenting. If you can fit them in your budget, the only thing is I wouldn't expect them to like have dramatic changes to your, like, don't expect your body to change dramatically just because you're taking fish oils. It's not like they cause fat to melt away or anything like that. They should anyways, if you already have a measurable, if you're measurably off in a couple of spots where they can help, there's good data to show that they'll help. So like I said, if your HDLs are low, you can start taking fish oils, and a few months later you can go get your blood tested and your HDL should actually come up. And HDL, for anyone who's not aware, that's the quote good cholesterol. My point is you can take them and actually measure that they did something, but the stuff that you're measuring won't necessarily be the difference between a 4-pack and a 6-pack. It would be more things you can't feel or see, but you know, your blood levels come back and you're like, oh, I'm in even better standing than I was last time. So you see what I mean? Like, it's not tangible. You can't see it, and you probably won't be able to necessarily be able to feel it. You may notice it in your skin and stuff like that too.
It's probably more of a health.
It's more of an overall health thing than it is a direct, wow, I took them and 4 weeks later, was I ever looking different in the mirror? That may not really, if you're taking them hoping for that, you may get a little disappointed and not really see much of anything.
Right.
So there's benefit, but it's not a benefit that necessarily shows up in the mirror.
Yeah, it might not necessarily transition to specific performance.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. All right, this one's interesting. So Timmy writes in, he's like, I've been doing the 12-week, I really enjoy the podcast, listen to all of them, which I suggest that if you haven't listened to all the podcasts, you probably should, because There's a ton of stuff in there. I've been doing the 12-week contest and have the picks took and have lost about 5 pounds since the start of the contest. He's got some possible topics and questions. His first one is use of the sauna. He says, I see a lot of bodybuilder type guys in the sauna a lot. Why would that be? I mean, is there any...
people find it relaxing. I've never stepped foot in one. I've been in one, but I have no idea why people always go in there. It's just forcing yourself to sweat. I guess people find it relaxing. I guess that kind of heat will cause your system to sort of... I guess it's not an excitatory thing. It's a place to relax. If coming down from your workout and wanting to relax is an issue for you, you could go to the sauna. But other than that, it's just a hot room that makes you sweat.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of the things that guys might do to try to shed water at all for shows or.
Not really. Guys who want to drop water for a show are way more pointed about it than that. They just take a diuretic.
Right. What about maybe is there any anti-inflammatory response that might help out with or
in a sauna? I don't know of any mechanism why heating your body up would cause an anti-inflammatory response.
Right. Yeah. Let's kind of get back to this is kind of one of the things that the questions don't confuse causation with correlation or vice versa, correlation with causation. I mean, just because you see these guys, remember there's also a kind of a lifestyle and. One guy does it and says it works, that it kind of trickles down to all the other guys in that particular lifestyle. And then, till finally, the third guy down doesn't even know why he does it. He just knows that everybody else is doing it. So,
hey, if people like the way it feels, if it just feels good to just go in there and sweat, that's do it. There's nothing wrong with doing something just simply because it relaxes you and it feels good. Like a lot of people jump into a hot tub for a bit, for no other reason than they just like the heat for 10 minutes. So,
yeah.
I can't tell you that that's not a good thing if you like the way it feels.
Yeah, it's funny. The next topic is it's got a smiley face beside it. He says meeting girls in the gym, and I'll handle this because it's pretty easy. You just go meet them.
Oh, I'll add one little thing though. If a lot of girls, and I've talked to various girls, and they could be open to being approached by a guy and chatting with them. Never hit on a girl in the gym because.
Yeah, no.
If she's at the gym, and especially if she's not in the girl only section, but she's actually mixed in with all the dudes, she probably gets stared at or hit on or even creeped on, like quite a bit in the gym, and is not. And she's there to work out. She's not there to be available to be picked up. Like that's why she's. You know what I mean? So if she was, if you approach a girl in a bar. She's like, okay, it's a bar. That's what happens in bars. People approach people for socially. But in a gym, if you go up and just start hitting on her, she's like, I'm here for a workout. So I guess what I'm trying to say is keep the topic to like workout stuff. Read the signal. If she's just like giving you one word answers, that means she just would rather just work out.
Oh yeah. No, I've said this time and time again. I mean, if I'm going to go to a place where I'm going a lot, like if there's a specific bar I go to, or if there's the gym, or if there's any place that I go to, I'm going to, for lack of a better term, own that place. So I'm going to know everybody there. Why not? So, I mean, it's not a matter of you trying to pick her up. I mean, like just the other day, there's a girl that I see in there all the time. And you just acknowledge what the reality of the situation is. You walk by, you say, hey, my name's Brad. I see you in here all the time. What's your name? And this girl's name was Julie. And then that was it. It's like, oh, okay, cool. It's kind of like this respect thing. And then you just kind of move on.
Because you got to know she knows you're there all the time too.
Exactly.
So if you just sort of come up and you awkwardly start to talk to her, she'll be like, look, I recognize you. I see you here. I know that you see me here. Like, don't make this awkward.
Yeah, just call out the obvious situation. Lots of times, if it's tough on you, the easiest thing to do is wait till another guy's around talking to her. And go meet the guy first. Hey, man, I see you in here all the time. My name's Brad.
Yeah, odds are there's a group of guys in there that know her that if you chat with them, it'll very easily segue into chatting with her.
Right. I mean, the whole goal, and like I say, when it comes to this type of thing, the whole goal isn't necessarily to try to pick the chick up out of the gym and take her home like right then. I mean, no, it's to maneuver yourself into the cool crowd of that particular place. And chances are that's kind of how there's like little niches of people and you're just maneuvering around. That's all it is. It's about expanding your influence of who knows you in the situation. So yeah, that's all I do. I just, if I see somebody in there long enough, and like I said, I'm not even doing it to hit on them. Not even at all.
Oh, see, I got a good story for this. So one of the guys I train with, his girlfriend trains at the gym, and she's like a fitness competitor, and she did some modeling for us for Venus. And so she's got like that kind of – she's got that look. She's the girl in the gym that a lot of people look over at because she's more kind of – it's different. She's a bit more muscular than every other girl, but she's also leaner than every other girl. So, and also really confident in there and mixed in with all the guys. She doesn't hide like – you know, in the women's only section. So she's obvious when she walks in. Every guy's looking. So there's a couple guys in the gym who've, like, tried to pick her up and try to hit on her. And those guys have set this awkward sort of divide between us and them now because it's, you know, when they realize, oh, she's dating one of those guys, when, like, in our group, now what? Now when those, like, it's sort of awkward to talk to those guys now because they're like, oh, yeah, I was hitting on your buddy's girlfriend. Like, it's sort of, they've wrecked it. If they'd have just come over and talked to us, like me and my buddies, then they could have learned who she was and recognized that, oh, we can know her and we can be a part of this group without that awkward, like, oh, yeah, I tried to pick your girlfriend up thing. So it's like that's the wrong way around it. If you want to get to know a girl, get to know the dudes that know her first.
Right.
Especially in a closed circuit or closed system like a gym. Like there's only, what, 50 to 100 people that you probably recognize at the gym, they all know each other. Like, somebody in there knows everybody. Like, whoever you're looking for or whoever you want to get to know in the gym, there's always somebody else in the gym that knows them, that you could find out about them.
Right. And the other thing about that, too, is that there's not really a big sense of urgency behind it all. You can take your time.
Oh, yeah, because you know they'll be there the day after day. It's not like they're going anywhere.
Well, yeah, it's like church. I mean, like people talking about like trying to find girls at church. I mean, like you know that she's going to be there next Sunday. Mm-hmm. You know, so you can take your time and kind of stage, you know, and be kind of meticulous about it if you want to, if that's your goal. You know, it's not like if you go to a bar out of town or whatever. I mean, like literally, yes, you have one shot.
It's tonight or nothing. So
yeah, it's like balls out, and here's how it is. But I mean, if you're in a situation where, like this, or if you're in your favorite bar and this girl comes to the bar all the time, and you know she's there all the time, I mean, you don't have to really get that aggressive. You know, I got to do it all now, because two things happen. Number one, everybody feels it. Guys know what's going on, so the guys hanging around her, they're going to kind of swoop in and kind of, you know, I'm not going to say protect her, but kind of, you know.
They'll make it less comfortable for you.
Exactly. Instead of you just being the cool guy, which that's your whole point anyway, is being the cool guy who is just trying to get to know people. I mean, just acknowledge it for what it is. Hey, you know, I see you guys in, I mean, shit, that's all it is. Hey, I see you guys in here all the time. I just like to meet people. I might need a spot once in a while. You know, my name's Brad. And just meet everybody. Okay, cool. You know, it's kind of like this respect thing that everybody has. It's like, okay. Because like yesterday, same thing. I met this guy named Timothy first. He's in there all the time. And he just happened to be talking to her. And so I met him first, and it was just funny. Met him first and met her, and she's like, oh, yeah, we're in here all the time. And he looks at her, he goes, yeah, he lives here too. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. It's kind of like this. Yeah. Yeah, don't make it weird. Just make it, just be cool. That's the secret. Because I think the big thing, and like I said, I don't want to get on a tangent on you know, attraction and picking up women or whatever, because, you know, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, it's, you just want to be cool in the situation, because people will help you that way. They'll do all the work for you. They'll introduce you to everybody, and everybody knows other people. So that girl might have a boyfriend, but guarantee you, she got a lot of other single friends that may or may not work out at that gym. And from what I've seen, lots of people at the gym go out together. So you could be invited in that crowd, then you're off to the races. You don't have to do any work. They introduce you to everybody in the crowd that's out and say, hey, this person's cool. Hell, that's all the work right there.
Yep.
So, all right. couple other topics. We're going to one of them's things to make your picks look as good as possible. We will cover that.
Yeah, don't worry about that. That's the last coaching call.
Yeah, we'll cover that in last coaching call before the thing. The next one is tanning and other things to improve your looks, teeth whitener, manscaping. Since the whole AI is to look more attractive, what else can we do? Not wearing your phone on your belt, stuff like that. I'll be honest with you.
I think we need to interview somebody who's like up on that, like the concept of, I don't want to say fashion, but just how to present yourself.
Yeah, I can do that.
You can cover that.
I can do that. But kind of overall, I mean, tanning for the most part, my perspective on tanning is, you know, it's cool and all. Don't wear it out because, you know, obviously you burn your skin out.
If you live in a northern climate and everyone else around you is pale except you, you look kind of dumb.
Yeah.
It's okay to be, like, whiter or lighter if everyone else is too. Like, I'm in Canada. Like, if I'm walking around with a pretty deep tan in December, I look like kind of goofy because everyone else is lighter.
So. Here's the other thing, too, you have to remember is that the whole goal of this, remember what we talked about, building a sustainable lifestyle, but it also has to look effortless. So that's kind of the big key I don't think guys understand is that what you have and what you're doing for yourself. You know, we kind of go about that. We talked about this in Covert Nutrition. And this is why we talk about not sharing your goals with a lot of people other than people that are in your kind of core group that are trying to achieve the same thing. Because you don't want people to think that you're working super hard at what you look like. And when you really get the deep down, I mean, it just makes it obvious that you're working your ass off to support this look that you have. When it's kind of like going back to that never let them see you sweat type of a thing. I mean, I think having a good base tan is okay, but I mean, getting super dark, except for, you know, maybe contest prep and stuff to help your pictures. Me personally, I'm not a big fan. It just makes your skin look old. I've seen people that get, I've seen people get addicted to tanning beds. I'm not sure if it's an actual condition. It might be psychological, but I'm not sure. But I do know that there are people that really just.
They can't help it. I mean, it works. It works for your after pick. It, for some reason, and all bodybuilders do it. Your definition shows up better with darker skin and a darker tan. Just because the lights wash out a lot of your definition. So, if you're darker, it just shows through a little bit more. So, it helps with your after pick. But for your general walking around life, there's no reason to. I mean, if you like it and you just really dig it, go ahead. But if you're purely doing it because you think it's helping somehow, then that's probably not the right idea.
Right. I mean, you got to remember these guys, they tan up and they put oil on to help the lights on stage to show the texture of everything they're trying. I mean, we're talking about this dry look that, you know, they're really trying to show off every little
again thing. And that's to make it look like how you really do look, but on camera. So however lean you look at the end versus – and then you take that and snap a picture of it, the picture you don't look as lean because the camera washes that out. The reason you tan at the end or even do the self-tan or like the paint-on tan like the bodybuilders, that's just to get the camera to show what they actually look like live. See what I'm saying? So like if you're like the day before the show and someone's standing right in front of you going, "May, okay, that's it. You've got it. You're in shape." The camera can't see that. The camera, you'll look washed out. That's why you have to put the tanner on, so the camera sees what you look like live. It's hard to explain. Basically, as soon as you go from live to a flat 2D image, you just don't look as ripped. So that's why you got to do everything you can to show off what you look like live.
Yeah. Let's see. As far as teeth whitener and stuff like that, I mean, yeah, go for it. I can't see anything wrong with that. As far as manscaping, I've never met a woman who doesn't like that. So, yeah, I would definitely go for that as well.
Yeah.
It helps with some of the going south type of things, not to get too graphic, but you understand what I'm saying. Let's see. I mean, yeah, this was basically more about I guess when he's saying manscaping, he was talking about maybe just shaving your body. Whenever I hear manscaping, I'm thinking, you know, the nether regions.
Yeah.
So, but I get he's talking about as far as pics are concerned. You know what? We'll cover all of that stuff when we get into photos. So that's funny. I didn't even read the question right. We're about to run off on a fun tangent.
All right. So what do you got next?
Alright, and then we got this last one. And let's see. Okay. Quick question for the coaching call. If I want to speed up the process of burning fat with intervals, given the short time frame until the end of contest, would it be okay to do just the booster sets for a few weeks and focus on intervals if I'm happy with my current muscle mass? Or should I stick to the weight training in full and let the diet lose the fat more slowly?
Okay.
I think there are a lot of misconceptions in this question.
Well, you're just assuming the intervals can really burn a lot of fat versus diet. I mean, I don't know how big you are, but unless you're – well, it won't matter because the bigger you are, the harder an interval will be, even though it'll burn more fat. But as you get smaller, the interval won't burn as much fat because your body's smaller. So as you converge towards your – that's the whole catch-22 with cardio. It does less as you get leaner because there's less of you to move around. So you got to do even more for it to burn more calories. So as you converge towards like single digit or around 10% body fat, that means you weigh a lot less, which means every step you take during cardio is doing less work because there's less of you. So that will never add up to what you can do with diet. Like, yeah. You know, we can just, you know, if my, you know, I've said that my BMR is probably somewhere around just under 2000. So if I eat 1,000 calories today, and then I do a workout, let's say I burn a couple hundred calories at the workout, that's a 1,200 calorie deficit probably. You know how much exercise I'd have to do to create a 1,200 calorie deficit by itself? I'd have to be in the gym for 4 hours, 5 hours. I'd have blisters all over my feet. I would just be a mess. So you just can't do it. And you can't do that every day. You'd be a wreck within 4 days. I can eat 1,000 calories every day for the next 7 days if I want to, and it's actually not that hard. So it's just the amount of bang for your buck, the effort put in versus the payoff, you're just not going to burn as many calories doing extra interval work as you could by doing the sort of mental effort it takes to cut your calories off at a certain level. So, yeah. I mean, I would say find a way to keep your calories under control, maybe take a fat burner or a caffeine tablet or something that controls your appetite. And, you know, get busy doing something else than eating versus trying to work it off because and you also have to remember that training, doing enough extra training, like intervals, cardio, whatever you want to call it, could eventually stimulate your appetite to the point where you break. So you're walking a fine line. Now, I don't want to leave it on a negative note there. Extra exercise, of course, burns calories, right? Any extra exercise you do is burning calories. You just need to be honest with yourself, saying, can I actually keep my calories right where I want them as far as how many I'm eating and add in all of this extra exercise and not affect the amount of calories you're eating? If you can, like let's say you decide, well, let's say your BMR is 1900 and you're going to stop at 1200 calories. So you've got a 700 calorie deficit and you're going to add in 500 calories worth of intervals. So now you're at a 1,300 calorie deficit. That's a lot. I mean, that's a pound almost every. That's burning off a pound of fat every 2-3 days if you're doing that. But you know, can you keep the calories under control with all that extra exercise? If you notice 2 or 3 days later it's really making you hungry, and you keep cheating a bit on the eating, then you got to decide. Well, all I did was exercise an extra hour, but then I ate all the calories back that I exercised off, and now I'm just right back to where I started. So, and there'll be some mix. There'll be some mix of it, but both that work. Obviously, exercising is valuable and you have to do it. But there's some sweet spot where you don't want to go any lower on the eating side. Like it's like, I don't want to eat any less than 1,000 calories a day. That's just a pain. It's just no fun. But I also don't want to exercise any more than 2 hours a day because that sucks too. So there's a sweet spot somewhere where it's sustainable for your life. Now, bodybuilders towards the end of their contest prep drive their calories really low. Like one of my buddies, he's really big, and he drops all the way down to 1,500, 1,600, but we're talking about a guy who's 6'5 and 300 pounds. He drives his calories all the way down to about 1,600 calories, and he bumps up his training to multiple cardio sessions a day plus his weights. So he's to the point where he's probably trying to burn off all 1,600 calories that he ate. So he's trying to land at zero every day. That's pretty tough. And if you don't have his kind of dedication and you're not literally in a bodybuilding show, like if you, You know what I mean? Like, it's that's a lot of work where he could have just ate slightly less than 1,600, maybe 12, and then knocked off one of those, get rid of one of those cardio sessions, and he'd still be right where he wanted to be.
Right.
So it's how much effort you want to put in to allow yourself to eat more. It's really, it's just a balance of what fits for your life.
Right. And we need to quantify or qualify this too, because there's a couple of unsaid things that you talked about, but I think we need to clarify. Number one, you know, this guy's, he's also able to do this much work because he's on drugs. And so that's enhanced his recovery ability significantly.
Oh yeah. The example I gave. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, here's what you have to understand. Me personally, I'm not a fan of beating the hell out of myself when I'm in a deficit. It sucks. Your recovery, I mean, like today, I worked out hard yesterday. I mean, I'm in deficit right now. I woke up this morning just beat, mm-hmm. like literally beat. And, you know, I know I can't go to the gym today and do that. You know, it literally, I slept 10 hours last night. I mean, that's 4 hours longer than I usually sleep.
Right. So, and that's what I'm talking about, the sweet spot. In a deficit, yeah. You're going to recognize, you got to calibrate your calories to what keeps you functional for the day, but still in a deficit. Plus how much exercise you can handle while in that deficit without, like, getting, you know, completely irritated and breaking down.
Yeah, I mean, there's different. There's definitely different types of burnout.
Yeah, and you'll regulate to the spot that fits for you. And, you know, I mean, you could test it and press it a bit, and you'll, like, well that's, you know, you could push your calories down and push your exercising up and be like, whoa, that was too much, right? And then you'll just, you know, with the convergence theme, you'll converge to an amount of calories and amount of training that fits to get you where you want to go. And the issue is, there's some amount of patience involved. You can't just decide, I'm going to work out twice a day for the next 60 days and eat just 400 calories. Like, you're just not going to do it. So be realistic.
It's hard. The other thing with that is, you know, he's saying I'm happy with my current muscle mass. I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I'm going to be straight up honest. You drop 10 pounds, you're going to shrink. I mean, just the fat coming off of you is going to scare the hell out of you. Hmm. You know what I mean?
So, hey, you always want to be training to build muscle, always, because your muscles are always in a state of coming down. You have to fight to keep your muscles the size they are in general, because they're always in a state of wanting to go back to their base size, the size they were before you ever trained. So you got to understand you're fighting against that, like, every day.
Yeah, so you're saying you're happy with your current muscle size right now, but if you're trying to drop 20 pounds, when you drop that 20 pounds, you're going to look significantly smaller because you don't have the fat layered within the muscle and around the skin.
Yeah.
Right. So
I would say stay on the workout. I would say stay on the workout, adjust your calories to something you can manage but lower, and add in the intervals as you feel you can do it without it, like, kind of wrecking your lifestyle.
Yeah, me personally, I don't even include intervals.
Me neither. But if you can fit them in and you can handle them, I would add them in, like, one session a week, then maybe two, and then if two you can handle, leave it at that. If you feel raring to go and you've got energy for all your weight training workouts, then add in a third. My guess is three will be too much. And they don't just need to be intervals. You can do steady state cardio. Now, I understand the question also said about doing the boosters. Now, that could be a whole different way of training, and I've never tested it. If you want to test that, you could literally use the boosters as your workouts plus the interval. That's completely different, and but really now you're talking about bodybuilding splits. That's really all you're talking about. So.
And you're also talking, if you're competing in the contest, you're talking about performing an untested experiment. You know, you got to remember, there's money on the line. So,
and you know what? I can't say that it wouldn't work, because we've never seen anyone do it that way.
Right.
So I guess what we're saying is, if you're going to do it, keep us posted, because we can't really predict it. So.
Yeah. I mean, my big thing with intervals, from what I've seen in the past for most people, is that anytime anybody includes a lot of interval work in their workouts, it only tells me that they're not working hard enough in the weight sets. Their intensity just isn't there. I mean, if you feel like you've got the energy in general to do more than maybe one or two interval training sessions a week, you're definitely not lifting heavy enough.
And during the base workouts, yeah.
Right. I mean, for the most part, I just walk. And the reason I like walking is because it requires basically no recovery. I mean, it doesn't
Yeah, it takes a little bit longer. And that's the thing with intervals. Interval training, to me, is... I mean, you're trying to cheat time with it, is essentially what you're trying to do. You're trying to get more work done in less time. But it's... Right. It becomes, and that's why we got rid of them, because it becomes like a limiting. It becomes limiting on everything else as far as total energy reserve.
Right, and the other thing you hear about the other thing about intervals too is that most of the time intervals are done with workouts that are either circuit based, so that like the people will tack them on the end. So it's still that same type of workout. You got a circuit training based workout, and then you followed up with interval trainings, and it's. That's kind of a specific protocol all the way around from what I've seen.
Yeah.
So it's kind of part of that. And it's also, you know, all the research, you have to understand, all the research that's been done on intervals, unless I'm mistaken, it's just people either doing intervals or steady state or intervals or whatever, and that's it. There's no other type of training.
Oh, right. I see what you're saying. Yeah, and then the head-to-head research on intervals versus steady state don't show any greater... When normalized for work, they burn the same amount of calories. So it's literally you're just trying to save time. That's all. But the potential detriment is that the intensity factor, like driving your system up to that intensity, like repeatedly all the time, might be what sort of gets you to a burnout state. Because we're 100% expecting that intensity during the weight training workouts. Like we expect you at a max intensity every time you do weights. So it's almost like throughout the week you only have so many moments where you can hit max intensity. So we would rather see you hit max intensity during all your weight training sessions, and then you can go way low intensity on your cardio. I guess your intensity gun has only got so many bullets in it. You might as well save them for your weight training, and not your cardio.
I personally, we got to call a spade a spade. I mean, our workouts are bodybuilding workouts. That's what it is. It's bodybuilding.
We don't talk about it.
I have never in my life seen a bodybuilder do intervals.
Yeah, me neither.
Never. I mean, so I know this is, Cam, we kind of go back to correlation, causation, but these guys experiment on themselves so much that I would expect that if it was that big of a deal, you would see all these guys doing it.
I think it's the intensity effect. If you are going to ramp up interval intensity, you have to ramp down some of your weight training intensity.
Yeah, I mean,
there's just only so much you can push until you burn out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have it. I don't have the gas to do it.
Yeah,
I used to.
But let's finish with this though. If you're gonna try that, doing the boosters and then the intervals, like email me, and we can go back and forth and maybe try to build it out. And if you actually want to test it, it will be an interesting test. Anyways, I can't really say what will happen, but so. I've never seen anyone do it, so that's why I mean we're stuck right now. We don't really know what to say to you.
Yeah, but as far as generic advice, yeah, weight train your ass off, figure out a deficit that you can sustain,
and then splash in cardio where you can fit it.
Yeah, and for me, I would just say walk.
Yeah, low intensity. It's relaxing. It's relaxing.
Yeah. I think there was some anti-inflammatory stuff that came in with that too, but that's more your thing. But
sure.
I think that's it, man. I think we got all the questions covered for this particular week. A lot of good ones.
All right, that's good.
So, anything you want to touch on really quickly?
No, that's good. We'll talk about the muscle index next week, and then get your questions in for the following week. After that, will be our next coaching call.
Yeah, we'll. Streamline that a little bit better and get that nailed out. But all right, well, like I say, for John Barbin, I am Brad Howard, and that's your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.